Makeshift Stories is now available on Stitcher Radio on demand. Download the free mobile app today and listen to us anywhere, anytime. There's no more syncing, no downloading, and no wasted memory.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
An idea can radically change whole industries, or even the course of history. If you can, try to remember the world before the internet. Do you still prefer to use the index at the back of a book, instead of a search field? How many great ideas have languished and died in the undocumented shadows of history that would have sculpted a very different present? We'll never know. In this month's story, an energetic late 19th century entrepreneur struggles to introduce a new technology that will shape the next century and realize her dreams. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Story 70, The Last Big Idea. Somewhere in some time, you might reach for the moon and actually get there.
She looked up at the brilliant blue, green, and white disc, a dramatic contrast to the stark monochrome of the cliffs that surrounded her. Violent, nearly vertical thrusts of rock, so desolate as to be strangely beautiful. Here, there were no boundaries, no rules, only a harsh, unforgiving freedom, paradoxically offering everything and absolutely nothing at the same time. Up on the ridges, a creature that reminded her of a dog howled with a primeval cry from the beginning of time at the glaring ball as it stubbornly hung in the black sky, taunting the poor animal with its indifference. Finally, turning its back to the orb, the dog-like thing defiantly growled before it left. Isabel Mackenzie woke from the dream, a dream that had haunted her sleep for as long as she could remember. Raids gasped in horror and rushed to hold her back as Isabel tried to lean out over the edge of the cliff so she could see the bottom of the falls, where torrents of water relentlessly carved away at the soft rocks of the gorge.
"So much potential energy,"
she whispered in awe, brushing the panicked aides away like annoying flies. To the relief of everyone, Isabel pulled back from the precipice to proudly look over to the newly completed channel that fed the huge water wheel, by far the largest one ever built. Across the river in the distance, on the American side, Isabel thought she could see a group of overly curious U.S. government officials, armed with the new pearl prism binoculars, keeping a wary eye on their British and Canadian cousins. Unconsciously, Isabel fingered the Queen Victoria Cross, pinned prominently to her coat. She wore it to all her public engagements, so the men around her would not forget her role in the redesign of the Royal Navy's turret gun and its adaptation for land vehicles in the Boer War. The award opened doors and leveled the playing field in the male-dominated world of industry. Isabel was a grudgingly accepted anomaly, a visionary of extraordinary imagination, an engineering savant who could build almost anything she dreamed of. But the road was not always very smooth for her, either through jealousy, fear, bureaucratic intransigence, or just blatant discrimination. Isabel was often met with fierce opposition, which she responded to, like the canal, with flagrant disrespect for the rules, doing almost anything to achieve her goal. So, to the chagrin of the government, her water wheel now industriously spun, powering her new nearby manufacturing and compression plant. Fed up by the endless arguments and ministerial red tape, Isabel had built the whole complex without final approval. Visibly red with anger, the Minister of Railways and Canals tried to catch her eye. Isabel glanced away, pretending not to notice him, but heard his heavy footsteps steam her way. She waited until the last second, then suddenly pivoted like a wind vane in a shifting breeze to face him.
"Oh, Sir Cameron, what a surprise,"
Isabel greeted through the teeth of a perfectly forced smile.
"I assume you have come to let me know that the government has, after only half a decade of review, finally decided to give its go-ahead to my little project here.
Absolutely not, Sir Cameron huffed, angrily pointing a finger at Isabel. You, madam, how dare you build on the very stretch of riverbank we were considering setting aside for a public park? And then to continue to operate after you've had a serious accident which threw a large steel container all the way into town? Well, you were lucky no one was killed. Madam, are you completely irresponsible? You need to shut this monstrosity down. Right now.
My dear Sir Cameron, I'd like to point out that while yourself and your honorable colleagues debated and lobbied over the use of this parcel of land, which, if my sources are correct, I rather doubt would have ended up as a park, more likely an industrial site for one of your private backers. I simply approached the current owner and acquired this spot for my little enterprise. As you can see, it's all complete, and my plant is safely capturing some of that magnificent potential energy which would have otherwise just washed away. And that accident you speak of? Well, it has been greatly exaggerated by those ignorant few who do not understand my technologies and who do not want me to succeed. I believe that they all belong to that club you so famously frequent. I think the Ministry should be more concerned by the internal combustion engines you appear to have been bought to promote by those very same few. Why, if you were to smoke one of your cigars around such an infernal machine, we'd surely be blowing up and half the country set on fire.
Well, I never. Sir Cameron spit back. Madam, if you persist with such thinly veiled slander, I'll be forced to add libel to the list of infractions I'm considering charging you with.
I have said nothing that is not already common knowledge, Sir Cameron. It is well known that your friends in the club have ties to a certain European carriage maker who is promoting internal combustion-powered auto carriages. A competitor of mine, I believe. I can assure the government's minister that the land transaction was done in accordance with the laws of the land. My solicitors, Baron and Laurentian, the best in the country, drew up the papers personally and will be more than happy to meet with you or that pack of conniving clerks from your ministry.
However unlikely, Sir Cameron's face reddened even more. Remember, madam, there is still your application to build and operate the new rail line to the north. Rumor has it that Mackenzie Carriage Works is depending on it. I need not remind you that it is a very important piece of infrastructure, Miss Mackenzie. We may have to look at this much closer. After all, we have to consider the long term to ensure that the public interest is served. And those kinds of things can take a very long time. So I wouldn't count on a decision anytime soon. He smiled. Oh, and yes, expect a visit from the clerks in public works to scrutinize that land deal. I have a good feeling that the ministry will find something amiss. Good day, madam.
Sir Cameron turned and charged away, trailing a flock of aides.
That ugly man and his backers have always been a problem,
Isabel muttered.
Even so, ma'am, you should not have provoked him.
Isabel's secretary, Laura O'Neill, reminded.
Remember what Mr. Baron advised. Stay out of his way. He's an important member of Cabinet.
Isabel shrugged.
He's just a lot of hot air, Laura. Besides, what can he do? The plant is already built. But I find that the air around here has been fouled by a skunk. It needs time to clear. Let's go. Miss Mackenzie,
Laura began to protest as Isabel marched off toward their waiting auto carriage and got in.
Come on, Laura,
she yelled.
We've got another stop to make.
The compressed air cylinder hissed as it spun up the flywheel. Isabel cautiously pulled the drive lever into gear, making the carriage jerk into motion. The machine silently picked up speed on the cobblestones, quickly leaving the roar of the Great Falls behind. The flywheel-powered auto carriage was one of Mackenzie Carriage Works' new products. Isabel and her engineers had rejected the new internal combustion engines being developed by their competitors in favor of something simpler, something that could be powered without drilling holes in the ground looking for noxious fluids or belching out choking smoke.
Instead, they employed incredibly efficient flywheels that used proprietary magnetic bearings set in a vacuum box and spun up the speed with compressed air from pressure tanks. Simple water wheels like the large one at the falls charged the tanks. Even portable water wheels were planned, so the range of the carriage was unlimited, and where there was no water, windmills could be used. Despite the utility of the system, there had been instant resistance, with detractors describing the pressure tanks as potential bombs that would need to be carted through every street in every town. Isabel had countered at every opportunity, pointing out that carrying a highly flammable liquid around to be burnt in an engine that was little more than a barely controlled series of explosions was more dangerous. She'd even purchased and set one of the infernal machines on fire in a busy town. The resulting explosion and public outrage only heightened her reputation as a rogue industrialist who went to extremes to achieve her dreams. Isabel had inherited Mackenzie Carriage Works, a small player in the burgeoning rail business, from her father after his untimely death, and had, despite the opposition of people like Sir Cameron, single-handedly turned MCW into one of the most innovative companies in the British Commonwealth. But unfortunately, innovation had not yet translated into profits, so MCW was constantly struggling.
"Nuts to Sir Cameron,"
Isabel muttered as she navigated the crowded narrow streets of the booming town.
"Out of the way!"
she yelled at a slow-moving horse-drawn wagon. Isabel made a sharp turn, then another and another, pointing the carriage out of town.
"Laura, look and see if anyone is following us."
Laura groaned.
"It's hard to be discreet in this thing, ma'am. But other than half the town gaping or jumping out of the way, I don't think anyone noticed." "Okay, just in case then, we'll double back around on the old farm cart trail. Then we're off to check the progress on the special project."
Laura gripped her seat as Isabel threaded the carriage along a twisting road with grass growing warily up between the tracks that had been worn into the ground by years of wagon traffic. Late morning light spilled through breaks in the trees, painting blinding patches of brilliance in the cool green shadows. They bounced along until they came to another, less used path that intersected the wagon trail almost at the very spot they had left the town a half an hour earlier. Isabel slowed the auto carriage to a crawl and turned into the deeply rutted path, which had, judging by the crust of broken tree bark, been abused by heavy logging wagons. As soon as they were around the first bend and out of sight, Isabel pulled off the trail and parked. Laura gave her a quizzical look.
"Sorry, Laura, I forgot,"
Isabel immediately replied.
"You've never been to the project site. On the books, we're building a spur line to a logging operation we bought last year. And, for appearances, we are cutting a few trees. But that's just a cover to keep nosy officials like Sir Cameron and the Ministry of Railways and Canals out of our hair. It's my pet project, and I don't want it mired down by bureaucracy and red tape. You'll understand when you see it. Now help me hide the auto carriage."
After carefully covering the machine with branches, Laura and Isabel followed the cart tracks on foot until it was interrupted by a rail line.
"I'll get an auto wagon sent down for us,"
Isabel called back as she walked over to a box nailed to a post beside the tracks. A thick wire ran from the box down the post to one rail. Isabel fished a key out of her handbag, unlocked the box, and pulled out a brass tube. She spoke into the tube, then placed it back into its housing.
"The wagon will be here shortly,"
she announced, then added after catching Laura eyeing the box.
"Oh, it's like a telegraph for voice. We licensed it from an American inventor, then modified it to use rails instead of wires."
The auto carriage silently sped along the rails until a group of hastily constructed wooden buildings came into view. One, painted green, was built right across the tracks, with great doors on the side where the rails ran under. They were closed at the moment, blocking any view of what was inside or beyond. The driver, a dark-haired man of indistinct origin, brought the auto wagon to a stop, just in front of the closed doors. Isabel hopped out and was immediately surrounded by a group of tradespeople and engineers, anxious to show her their work. Laura waited on the wagon until Isabel turned and waved her over. The group quickly walked around to a human-sized door cut into the long side of the structure, the engineers eagerly pointing to details on scrolls of plans as they all tried to squeeze through at once. None of it made sense to Laura until she noticed the windmills lazily turning in the afternoon breeze. Then she realized her boss had built a second compression plant without a permit. They entered a dark, cavernous space. Despite numerous skylights, it took several minutes for Laura's eyes to adjust to the gloom. Then she saw a streamlined shadow that rested on the tracks which ran through the center of the enclosure.
"Open the door so we can see,"
Isabel commanded. From somewhere in the shadows, unseen workers raced to each end of the building and hauled on protesting chains, which began to lift the heavy doors. Light spilled in, chasing the darkness away. Squinting in the sudden glare, Laura shaded her eyes, then turned towards Isabel, now silhouetted by light reflecting off the polished metal surface of a long, sleek tube with swept-back fins attached to each side. Laura had once seen a daguerreotype of sharks, and the machine behind Isabel hauntingly reminded her of an immense great white that had been captured, straightened, and covered in silver leaf, then strapped to the rails.
"Isn't she beautiful, Laura?"
Isabel enthusiastically shouted. Laura ran her eyes along the curves of the sleek machine until they met brass letters and numbers emblazoned along its beak. They spelt Project 8.
"I stumbled on the idea when I witnessed one of our compressed air tanks fail in the factory at the falls, then launch itself through a window. Oh, Laura, don't look so shocked. There's always some risk when you're dealing with immense pressures. Nothing is perfect. Just don't tell Sir Cameron that I admitted it. Anyway, one of our Chinese engineers pulled me aside and told me a story about experiments with gunpowder-propelled missiles in the Song Dynasty. I was so impressed that I put feelers out and bought an ancient rare Chinese text, which described the plans for a giant missile big enough to stand in. We borrowed some of their ideas, and I added my own. In Cantonese, the word for fortune and eight are similar, hence the name Project 8. I still don't understand,
Laura shyly admitted.
Back in 74, when I was a small girl, my father took me on an expedition to Egypt to see the transit of Venus. There were many famous astronomers in the camp where we stayed. Being the only child in the group, several decided to educate me while we waited for the transit. Through their telescopes, they showed me the Galilean moons, the tallest mountains on Luna, and the canals on Mars, and I was instantly captivated by the realization that those dots of light in the night skies are other worlds. Ever since, those quick glimpses of fantastical alien lands have haunted me. I want to see those canals, stand on the lunar mountains, and if there is anyone there, meet the locals. That's what this is, a way to get there. A ship that plies the ether between the planets. But how? You can't build a rail line to the sky,
Laura blurted out in disbelief.
Look down the line, Laura,
Isabel patiently explained.
See how the tracks curve up, then just end? My ship will speed down that track, then leap into the sky, where it will ride to the stars on a geyser of compressed air. Just like the ruptured tank at the factory. We've already proven the technique with scale models, and if the wind keeps up, we'll have enough compressed air for a test launch in a few days.
Isabel winked at Laura, then turned back to the gaggle of engineers and began discussing some arcane details that Laura didn't bother to follow. As she looked around, Laura noticed huge tanks, hundreds of times the size of the one that had failed at the falls, lining both walls of the building. And behind their stress metal skins, she knew that thousands of pounds of pressurized air was desperately trying to escape. The thought made her skin crawl, so Laura excused herself and went back outside to wait at what she felt was a safe distance. Despite what Isabel had told Sir Cameron, the accident with the test tank had been more serious than WCM led on. And even with the redesign of the pressure canisters, Isabel's engineers could not completely eliminate the possibility, however statistically small, of a catastrophic failure. That's why thick metal plates had been added between the passengers and the auto carriage's air tanks, and why Laura was nervous every time she rode in one. She couldn't imagine the problems encountered in scaling the system up to power Isabel's skyship. The thing was just as likely to burst into metallic shrapnel as fly, she concluded, spraying the entire county with deadly debris in the process. No wonder Isabel had hidden it, Laura realized. Then began to consider what she should do. Isabel looked up from the telegram bearing bad news to look out of her third-floor office window and watched the bustling streets of the town that was quickly expanding toward the Great Falls. It would be so much simpler to be one of the sightseers, with no more ambition than to watch the great river surge over the precipice, she mused. But she was bewitched by ideas and obsessed by the need to realize them, and that was what had driven her to move the MCW office here, to be close to her pet project and as far away from the plutocrats in the capital as she could get. But it had proven not to be far enough, and although she hated to admit it, Sir Cameron was right. The company desperately needed the Northern Line until its new products like the auto carriage caught on. It was her Achilles heel, and her opponents were taking advantage of it. She read the first line of the telegram again. Sir Cameron had managed to convince Parliament to reopen the application process for development of the Northern Line. It would delay the project by at least 2 more years. Even if she closed down all her experimental projects, she doubted that she could sustain MCW without another large rail contract within the next 12 months.
Sorry, Dad.
Isabel apologetically sighed. She had been told that their proposal was by far the best, but years of political wrangling had taught her that the cream does not always rise to the top, especially now with so much at stake. So much was being discovered. It was a battle over what the next century would be like, and for the first time she admitted to herself that she might be on the losing side. The last part of the telegram was the worst. Ministry clerks found loophole. Have court order to shut down compression plant. Found obscure regulation on transporting explosive material. Have declared pressure tanks explosive. All to be seized and destroyed. Are coming to serve you summons or arrest you if you resist. Suggest cooperation. L. Baron, partner. Baron and Laurentian. Isabel angrily crumpled the telegram into a ball and threw it out the open window. She had almost completely run through her family fortune supporting the company. After the damage being done today, there would be nothing left. She heard a commotion in the street below as a fleet of brand new gas-powered auto carriages coughed and sputtered to a stop in front of the building. They disgorged a horde of ministry clerks and local marshals who aggressively pushed their way into MCW's office. Excited voices echoed up the stairwell as Isabel struggled with a stubborn lock on the window. She had just managed to step out onto the metal escape ladder when loud bangs, followed by the sound of splintering wood, came from the direction of her office door. Isabel concentrated on quietly lowering herself to the ground, then slipped along the building towards the carriage house at the back. She cautiously nosed around the corner, quickly pulling her head back before two marshals who had been stationed in front of the wide carriage house doors spotted her. An unexpected tap on her shoulder made Isabel jump and nearly bolt toward the marshals taking her chances.
Isabel,
Laura quietly whispered.
Allow me.
Before Isabel could respond, Laura boldly walked around the corner and confronted the big men.
She's not here,
Isabel heard her secretary lie.
She's headed for her house. There's a shortcut she uses. You might be able to catch her.
Laura waved an arm as she misdirected the gullible marshals, pointing to back streets that would take them miles out of their way. As soon as the two men had jogged off, Laura waved Isabel over. To Isabel's dismay, most of the auto carriages already had their pressure tanks removed and drained, but one at the very back was still intact.
Come on!
Isabel shouted, racing toward the working auto carriage.
We'll take the one at the back. Let's use horses instead,
Laura countered.
A little slower, but not as obvious.
Isabel ignored the advice as she mounted the carriage and checked the flywheel.
It's still got more than half its spin. No need to charge until we get well underway.
Laura reluctantly climbed into the passenger seat, still complaining.
Isabel, we should take the horses. The ministry won't be looking for riders.
You're right,
Isabel grinned as she put the vehicle into motion.
But not quite yet.
They bounced down the main street that led to the falls, Isabel yelling at pedestrians and horse-drawn carriages to get out of their way.
Everyone will know where we're headed,
Laura pointed out.
Exactly. I want them to think I'm headed to the compression plant at the falls.
Before Laura could say anything else, Isabel swung into a quiet street that paralleled the falls, cut the power and turned again, then glided into an alley and stopped.
Time to abandon ship,
she commanded.
It'll look like we're trying to sneak into the plant from the back, and it'll take them a while to figure out we're not there.
Laura looked distressed.
But,
she began, then biting her lip stopped.
Laura, it'll be okay. We're heading in the opposite direction to Project 8. There's a shortcut through the woods, an old horse trail that only I know about. We can be there in 20 minutes,
Isabel assured.
But Miss Mackenzie, we should be going to your solicitors.
Laura firmly insisted, grabbing Isabel by the arm, trying to pull her in the right direction. Isabel shook herself loose.
There's nothing those fools can do now. But I still have time to act. Come on, let's go.
Isabel knew it was a long shot. However, if she managed to remove key plans and crucial yet-to-be-patented tech from Project 8 before it was impounded by the ministry, she might someday be able to start again. They didn't have much time, though. She knew that even a superficial audit of the books would reveal the project's existence. She might, at best, have a day or two before Sir Cameron's army of clerks stumbled on it. Isabel and Laura approached the site on horseback. Both were scratched and dirtied by the ride along the overgrown trail. To Isabel's frustration, Laura had been slowing their progress by claiming to have problems with her mount. Finally sensing how agitated her secretary was growing, Isabel drew her horse to a stop in a small clearing.
Laura,
Isabel demanded,
what's the problem?
Laura looked silently at the ground for several minutes, then raised her head to meet Isabel's angry stare.
It's just too dangerous. Laura, they're after me, not you. Anyway, if we're caught, I'll tell them I ordered you to help. Don't worry, you're in the clear. That's not it,
Laura suddenly shouted.
It's the project. It's too dangerous, but you can't see that. You won't listen to reason. You're too obsessed with your dreams. Sorry, Miss Mackenzie. You're not meant to be here yet. I was supposed to detain you. What?
Isabel angrily shouted.
They need more time to dismantle your dangerous machine. They've only just got there.
Isabel's heart almost leapt out of her chest.
What have you done, Laura?
Silence fell for what seemed like minutes before Laura responded.
I'm just protecting us all,
she defiantly stated.
Think about it. Just one faulty rivet and... And what, Laura? The air would escape, that's all. I can't believe that you, of all people, have been hypnotized by ministry propaganda. You can consider yourself relieved of your duties, and there's no severance. I'm sure that Sir Cameron's backers have paid you well.
Isabel forced her horse around Laura's, then coaxed it into a gallop. Isabel managed to slip on scene into the building. Sir Cameron and his minions were already there, huddled together in the center of the workshop, staring and pointing at the sleek lines of Project 8. At the far end, Isabel's team had been herded together and were now ringed by marshals. Their officer had taken one engineer over to the immense pressure tanks and was forcing her to slowly vent all the compressed air. Out of the corner of her eye, the engineer noticed Isabel lurking in the shadows, dropped one of her tools, and as she picked it up, subtly motioned to the large flywheel at the end of the row of tanks. Isabel edged along the wall until she was in front of the giant machine that powered the catapult launch system. She discreetly placed her hand on one of its cool steel surfaces and felt a faint vibration within, and smiled.
It's charged,
she muttered to herself.
If I ever can, I need to thank that woman.
Her engineer had taken advantage of the marshal's ignorance and had managed to charge the flywheel at the same time she was emptying the tanks. A quick look at the controls across the room told her that the system had been left in launch ready. She knew her team had been in the middle of a pressure test when Sir Cameron's lynch mob had arrived, so the onboard tanks would be full. Isabel spotted the hammer lying on a nearby bench. Again, moving slowly and silently, she picked it up, then inched back towards the closest pressure tank. It was a gamble, but it was her only chance. They could have just as easily been working in the opposite direction and have started near the flywheel. Isabel checked the gauge.
Full.
As she turned, the hammer accidentally hit a metal pipe, causing a loud ring that echoed through the building. She froze, but it was too late. Startled, Sir Cameron and his troops craned their heads toward the source of the noise.
"It's that infernal woman! Get her away from the tanks!" Sir Cameron bellowed. "She could kill us all!"
Two marshals immediately broke away from the group guarding Isabel's team and charged toward her. Isabel looked for the weakest point in the forest of pipes leading out of the tank, then struck it with all her strength and jumped out of the way. Determined to return to its natural state, a hurricane of air rushed out, causing a dust storm of debris.
"She's crazy! It'll explode!"
Isabel heard someone frantically yell over the roar of escaping gas. Sir Cameron and his group immediately disintegrated into chaos and charged for the door. Isabel only had a few seconds until her diversion literally ran out of air and Sir Cameron's people realized there was no danger. Hiding behind the clouds of dust kicked up by the artificial geyser, Isabel raced to the ship and locked herself in. She quickly made her way along a narrow hall to the machine's pilot room at its nose and strapped herself into the driver's chair. Noticing that not all the controls had been hooked up, she cursed at the indifferent metallic walls. But Isabel had made her choice, and there was no turning back. She hoped all the crucial components were operational. Without another thought, Isabel pulled on the levers that activated the catapult and opened the valves to the pressure tanks. She was immediately rewarded with a force that slammed her into the chair, crushing her chest in an iron grip that wouldn't let her breathe. Desperately, she struggled against the unseen force, but her vision narrowed down to a tunnel, then into blackness. Isabel McKenzie woke and looked up at the blue and white planet pasted to the black sky. So brilliant was its glare that the stars had given up their paltry presence and all but disappeared. Tiredness overtook her again, so she closed her eyes and started to drift away. But, in the distance, Isabel thought she could hear a defiant howl and smiled.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 70, Somewhere, Sometime, The Last Big Idea. We hope that you enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on iTunes. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories, just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.